Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Today we're going to talk about something that has really started to hit the headlines and got people talking, certainly in business sector, in the business world. And we're going to talk about the BEE, Black Economic Empowerment Premium, that is the legal amount that the government can spend extra in order to procure a service or goods from a racially preferred buyer. To talk about it is my colleague and fellow of the IRR, Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, welcome.
Hi, sorry. Thanks for having me.
Have I about got that right? That is a description. It is government procurement that we are paying premium on to make sure that the person providing the service or the good is BEE compliant, is black.
That's right. I think it's important to distinguish between the rhetoric and the reality here. So often when people talk about BEE in public procurement, they talk about a kind of a tiebreaker. You know, it's like, we don't want to pay extra or anything. It's just, you know, we want to try and help black businesses do better. And that is not the way the system works. The way the system works and has worked for 18 years is that every company bids and it's awarded points based on price. And that's both to take into account quality and so on. And then it's awarded points for BEE. And the way that it works out, as has been explained by Chief Procurement Officer of the Treasury, Vilima Tibula, is that there's an effective cap on how high the BEE premium can be. Now, for contracts over 50 million rand, that cap is 11.1%. So that means you can spend for two companies selling exactly the same product, the one can charge an extra 11% and still win the bid if it's racially preferred. And for contracts under 50 million rand, the cap goes up to 25%. So you can charge an extra quarter if you are racially preferred. And the thing that's important to know is that that system applies basically to all procurement, which is around 1.2 trillion rand every year. It's around 12-15% of GDP. So you could say it's an eighth or a seventh, depending on how people measure it. Sometimes it even comes down to six. But you could think, like, if you turn South Africa GDP into days of a week, it's like one day of the week is just government spending on procurement through the system, where the cap is mainly 25% extra that you can legally spend for racial preference.
As I understand it, it's that amount of extra money that is spent for that racial preference that the South African taxpayer is paying, but it's not getting value back for, essentially. Just get a sense. We're talking legal here. We're not talking about anything underhand or...
No.
It's purely...
Fully legit.
Per legislation. South Africa's not getting maximum value. I know that you've said that South Africa's not getting maximum value for it. How do we measure this, or how do we try to measure it? And what exactly could South Africa be getting back? What could the premium that is being spent simply on having the right BEE credentials as a company, what could South Africa could be getting versus what it is actually getting from just paying this extra amount?
So I'll give you a couple of examples. So one was the... Cape Town is the only organ of state that I know of that's done at least a partial survey of its BEE premium spending. And they found, as one example, as an item that they published in their value for money report, that traffic controllers, it's like a little computer system, pretty basic, that helps the lights know that they've got to go from green to red and orange and whatnot. And it costs like 70, 80,000 rand per unit. And I think that covers a whole intersection. The city puts out a tender, you know, it puts out an offer. We want to do business. We want to buy some of these things. And the original manufacturer says, hey, we'd like to sell it to you. And we can sell it to you quite cheaply for, let's say 80,000 Rand. But that manufacturer didn't have great BEE points. So another company said, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to buy it from the first company. So you'll get exactly the same product, but we'll sell it to you for the same amount plus 7%. But because we've got better BEE points, they still came out as the best option. And so the city was spending an extra 6.5 grand per traffic controller unit that they were buying. And they're buying quite a lot of those over the year. So then you think to yourself, okay, if they're buying 25 million rands worth of those through the year, these things break, they need to be renewed, sometimes they get stolen or whatever, how much is that extra 7% costing every time? Well, it's 7%. What could you do with that money? Let's say it comes out to $1 million, 1.2 million in the course of a year. Well, then you can think to yourself, for 1.2 million rand, you could have built a kilometer of road, depending on the kind of road and where it is. You could have put, I think it's something like 200 kids in school, depending on the school, but you could have maybe given someone life-saving treatment at a clinic, depending on the treatment. If it's something like just HIV treatment, you could have saved maybe 15 people's lives with that amount. So you think to yourself, what are the trade-offs that we're dealing with? In 2007, 2008, when this, look, this act was passed in 1999, 2000, the Public Procurement Framework Act, policy framework, triple PFA. Public Procurement Policy Framework Act. These names are a mouthful. When that thing was passed, white people in South Africa really did dominate the upper echelons of the economy. White incomes were probably around two-thirds of national income. Mm-hmm. So it's like whites were 10% of the population, but earning two-thirds of the money. And if you went to any boardroom, if you went to any sort of academic professor's suite, C-suite, you would overwhelmingly encounter white people. And there was this, historical fact that most white people most of the time had voted for apartheid. Of course, in 1992, the referendum goes the other way. But there was this lingering suspicion that maybe these few whites have all the money and they're going to use their power to keep excluding black people. So if you do this triple PFA thing for a while, you allow a black company to come in, that will give it a competitive advantage against an already established business. So that was the logic back in 1999. Now we're in 2025, and you think to yourself, okay, what's going on today? And Treasury has these numbers that they have not publicly told anyone, but which we managed to get them to divulge in Parliament, on how much has gone to majority Black-owned businesses since 2017. They reviewed 1.2 trillion rands worth of spending. Mm-hmm. So that's about 20% of the total spend. They just reviewed the stuff that is going through national at the highest level, most transparent, and probably where there's the least BEE premiums being spent, because at municipal, there's much more scope. Okay. So at national, they found that over 60% of the 1.2 trillion went to majority black-owned companies. So that's, and they found that ratio is likely to be at least representative of the broader spend. You add it all up and it's like, we ran the numbers, about 3.1 trillion rand has estimated to have gone to majority black-owned businesses since 2017-18. So now you're in a situation where majority black-owned businesses have made trillions of rands. That means they're well-established. That means there's no more this thing of like, you look at whites, how much do whites earn? Whites earn like a quarter of national income. It went from three quarters, two thirds. By 2005, it was half of national income went to whites. By 2015, it was a third. Now, it might be as low as 20%. Now, obviously, that's more than 7%, which is the white population. But if a minority of 7% is earning 20%, they're still a minority in terms of earnings. They're not dominating the whole sphere anymore. So you've got a huge change in the economic landscape. And in today's environment, I ask you, does it make sense to be spending an extra 7% in Cape Town, where they're trying very hard to maximize value for money? Does it make sense to spend that extra 7% to make some rich company richer? Does that make sense rather than spending that 7% on extending a road, or on building a clinic, or on handing out some more medicine, or on paying down the debt, which is squeezing everything else out? That's the question that we believe ought to be asked at this crucial juncture in South Africa's history, where for the first time as a Rainbow Republic, we have a proper budget debate. Budget that the ANC wanted to pass did not go through, and we've got an opportunity to reconsider things. And we say, you don't have to hike VAT. You don't have to make poor people spend more on everything. You don't have to cut consumer demand that chases away investment. There's a very simple way to make the books balance. Cut out BEE premiums. It's so good. Never mind hiking VAT, you'll be able to cut VAT by 100 billion rand conservatively, we estimate. And that can be cash left in the pockets of poor people who are struggling to make ends meet, so that they can get the best value for money when they spend their money, starting with the government getting the best value for money when it spends taxpayer.
In this respect, you raise the concept in articles and interviews of the fiscal multiplier, which essentially is what you've been describing. Can you give us an idea of how the fiscal multiplier has gone from a positive for South Africa to stagnant or negative even, and how that compares to much of the rest of the world?
I mean, it's a gloomy story, but it's important to note that the people who first identified the fiscal multiplier as a key measure of South Africa's health was Trevor Manuel when he was Minister of Finance. And going down the line, Tito Mboweni mentioned it, I think, at every single one of his budget speeches. And Mr. Gordon Gwana did in his earlier days, although it's a little bit slipped through the cracks. We'd like to bring it back. The idea is this. When the government spends money, it's just like you or me. You know, you can spend it wisely or you can spend it unwisely. And what happens if you spend it wisely is your money makes money. And the multiplier is a measure of, for every rand at the margin that is spent, how much more economic activity do you get? How much more economic growth? So if you're spending 1 rand, and we're saying at the margins, because obviously the first bit of government spending is hugely productive. Like the first 1 million rand that the government spends on, I don't know, the having police or just the idea of a government exists, that's a whole other story. But once we get to the point where you're now at the margin, thinking a little bit more, a little bit less, if the government spends 1 extra rand in 2005, that adds 1 rand and 35 cents to expected growth. So that's quite impressive. It means when the government's spending money, it's actually getting value for money. It's getting more happening than it's put in. More's coming out than it's put in. That's because it chose a good way to spend that money. According to a paper that's been peer-reviewed, was first published as a working paper in the South African Reserve Bank, the multiplier was 1.35. The international norm is between 0.8 and 1.3. So in like first world countries, they often, it comes below one, the governments get too big. That means the UK, it's sort of, they spend a pound, but somehow they only get 90 cents out of it because everything's been going for a long time. And the barnacles have grown thick on the ship, slowed down a bit. And we went from 2005 thereabouts to 2015. We came down from about 1.35 to about 0.8, then down to 0.7. But then an amazing thing happened. Instead of stopping there, we just kept going down. And they found by about 2018, these economists writing for SARB found that we'd gone negative. It meant we spent an extra rand and we got negative growth out of it. Now, the economist pointed out that this was a – it made them worry that their model was broken because around the world, it's not a result that you see a lot because it's so bad. It's almost – yeah, it makes you think, sure, I must be the one at fault here. There's no government that could be so bad at spending money. It's not even getting anything. It's getting negative. But they double-checked and they triple-checked and they found that was the result. Then another paper published by the United Nations University, UN Wider, a year later, found this similar results. For some years, they found statistically you couldn't differentiate our multiplier from zero. And on some indicators, they found it's negative. And that was sort of going into the plague. If you think about how the government spent money during COVID-19, paying the army to stop business from happening, you get the sense that multiplier would have gone more negative. And since then, we don't have data on 23 through 25, but it's on that specific measure, the multiplier. But on broader measures that are suggested, we think that it's probably in the same region. And, you know, that has partly to do with Auditor General results. It's got partly to do with how are investors seeing the climate, gross fixed capital formation, people building factories or not. Well, very much not. Opposite. More money gets pulled out than gets put in most of the time. So part of the thing here is that I think a reasonable person could be room for reasonable people to disagree about BEE premiums if our government was spending extremely efficiently. If it was just pumping and, you know, for every rand it spends, it's getting 1 rand 30 worth of growth out. And it's like, you know, look, we could be getting 1 rand 45 cents. We're only getting 1 rand and 30 cents, but we're willing to sacrifice some of that extra growth because we want to redirect things racially. Okay, maybe. And, you know, unemployment has gone down from, it was, you know, in the 20%, 22%, 18%, even, you know, high teens in 2007. If unemployment kept going down, now unemployment is like 5%. There's no real poverty. You know, there's mainly just like, it's like a fresh entrance into the $20,000 per capita per annum club, or maybe even 30,000. And it's looking a bit like South Korea was looking 15, 20 years ago. And you start thinking to yourself, okay, some guys want this, some guys want that. That's one story. But we are not in that story. We are in a story where we've had no economic growth since 2007. When this thing came into effect, everyone says 2007, that's when Zuma came, that's when the global financial crisis hit. But it's important to look at the laws. And the laws did change. And they changed fundamentally to allow BEE premiums to be part of how we spend one day in the week as a country. And slowly but surely, I think that they have played an important role in eroding our competitiveness and our productivity. And this is not to cast any aspersions on the race of people involved, as I've said many times, and as you know, Sarah, because I've told you their names, I won't say it on the radio. But some of my friends from high school, I got a scholarship to a very expensive high school in Santa. Some of my white friends have done very well off the BEE premiums. They have, you know, made companies that, so it's not about that. It's companies respond to incentives. So if you set up an incentive to make extra bucks, you know, making the customer happy and figuring out how to make an extra traffic light controller for 5% cheaper or something like that, or some the one that'll last a bit longer in the rain or be harder to steal. That's one way to do it. And companies will chase that carrot. The horse will chase the carrot. But if you set the carrot up the way we've set it up, companies will get really very good at maximizing their BE points to the point where 68%, you know, a vast majority of companies getting this stuff are majority black. So that's been successful. But in terms of the value for money thing, in terms of this, you know, are the roads getting to the schools in the heartland? Are the drugs getting there? Are the textbooks getting there? Is the real value for money being met? That's not happening. And so, you know, that's a very serious problem. And I think it maybe is connected to why GDP has stagnated. Maybe it is connected to why black unemployment has increased by like 10 million people. It's 18 million people now. It was 8 million people in 2006.
Well, essentially what you're saying is it's about policy. I mean, one doesn't even have to start looking at the whole broader, you know, nefarious situation of corruption. It's about a change in policy that has been to the detriment of this country. So as I understand it, we're now saying, let organizations, let companies compete. The companies who've benefited from the BEE premium should be in a position to compete either with each other or with people who're not charging a BEE premium. So this is where we're at. It's a question of changing the policy to bring in much needed money without taxing an already overtaxed population that really and I think it also goes to the fact that there's this perverse almost pride that the government has in the number of grant recipients that it's trying to support with a falling with a sort of minimal tax base. So
that's a very good point.
It's essentially good business. I mean, I've certainly from a practical point of view, on my own small scale, I found over the last 10, 15 years more and more use of, I suppose, small black contractors who are doing the job they are competing. And I have to say, by and large, many of them, if not most of them, are a damn sight better in a whole lot of respects than their white counterparts. So they have learned and are learning to compete. So what would be the downsides, if any?
I mean, so I think one downside, you sort of touched on there when you mentioned grant recipients and the perverse pride. Let's say a black person competes in one of the parts of the economy where BEE is not prevalent. So, you know, businesses that are below 50 or 25 people tend to be BEE exempt. And so, yeah, if you're in suburban areas, you know, contractors that are coming around to do pools and gardens or help install IT things, small, you know, shops that deal with computers, a range of things. In the farming environment, I know, I was just in KZN 2 weeks ago, and two different farmers were telling me about a new contractor that they had to bring around bees to help pollinate part of their field. And this young black guy is doing really well there. And, you know, it's just totally hiring this guy on merit. Okay, so that guy, that beekeeper who saw a niche, who saw a gap in the market, he keeps his bees on his thing, he brings them around to different farms, he's getting, the government has no claim on him. It can, he had no feeling of like, oh, well, I owe this to the ANC or I owe this to the government. So he's a tricky customer when it comes to politics. If you want that guy's vote, you're going to have to really, you know, offer him something that he wants. You don't have a guilt card that you can easily play with him because he doesn't owe you. I mean, what he owes you is what we all owe the state, which is insofar as it's managing to keep the rule of law, law and order, property rights protected. So there's background conditions for trade. But he hasn't been singled out for any special treatment in some way. That's very different for a grant recipient who feels they kind of owe it to the state. It's very different to someone who feels like they've made it to be the CEO of a big bank or a big insurance company or something like that, or the board of a major, because they was, the government did the special policy to say they've got to make it. So politically, it's just a very different situation. So I think what there is to lose, that political sort of guilt card, that guilt grip that the state has on people that it's helped in this singling out way. But we look at our polls, we say, you know, what's the biggest issue in South Africa? Every poll since 2013 identifies unemployment. What's BEE supposed to do? It's supposed to help people out the shadow of apartheid. And black unemployment has almost doubled under BEE premiums. There've been a range of factors. We think it's one of the factors that's created that situation. So I think that although there'll be some political loss, you know, COSATU, some there'll be complaints, SACP, there'll be some complaints, some good corporate people who are reasonable and send their kids to private schools who feel like they owe it all to BEE, they might be worried about this. They might vote against you. They might turn to the MK or the EFF or whatever. I think more than made up for politically by the support that will go to any politician brave enough to help South Africans get work, because getting work is the biggest appeal from ordinary people in numbers, in vast numbers. So economically, it's just upside. Politically, there's a bit of downside, but there's a huge upside. I think that it just takes a bit of
courage. Yeah, fortune essentially favors the brave. Gabriel, thank you very much for that. I mean, we could go on, but time is limited. And thank you. I'm sure we'll pick it up as the year progresses, and some year it's going to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.